Hello, everyone. This is Alan Seal. I'm the director of the Center for Transformational Presence at transformationalpresence.org, and I'm here with my colleague and good friend David Robinson from Truly Powerful at trulypowerful.com. Thank you for joining us. We're really excited to be here today. And just to make sure that everybody can hear, all of the participants are on mute, but would you just press 1 on your phone if you can hear? Great. Okay. Getting lots of ones. Wanted to make sure that we were getting through. So we'll just keep everybody on mute for a little bit for us to talk for a little bit, and then we'll open it up. You know, the purpose of these dialogues is really to explore new paradigms of leadership in community and business, society, government, and to talk about approaches, to discover new approaches of ways of thinking and kind of fundamental shifts in perception that can help shape leadership in service of a greater good. That's really what the Center for Transformational Presence is all about. It is about shifting perception and finding new ways of thinking and working with intuitive thinking as our primary mode of approaching things. So with all that said, let's just dive in and get started. Today's topic is leadership in an ambiguous world. And David and I will talk about this for a little bit. We probably will go into some kind of an exercise a little bit down the way, and then we'll open it up to questions and comments and see where it wants to go from there. But David and I will just kind of kick this off as we had the wonderful gift of spending the last 4 days together here near Boston at my home planning the Transformational Presence Global Summit gathering, which is coming up in March for all the graduates of the Leadership and Coaching Program. And so we started in this conversation around ambiguity in the world today and what does that mean for us in leadership, and kind of felt like, oh, yeah, that's our topic for this call today. And, you know, today we have a lot of thought leaders for quite a long time who have been saying we're living in a very complex world. That's no surprise to any of us. But in the last few months, there's been a shift in that conversation to talking about living in an ambiguous world. And what they are meaning by that is that things can no longer be so clearly defined, that the conditions, the circumstances, whatever is existing today will probably be different tomorrow, and it will certainly be different next week and perhaps the week after that and the month after that, so that whatever we have right now is what we have right now. And it may not be the same tomorrow. And the circumstances, the situations, the players, everything about where we are in the world is shifting and changing so quickly. So it's not just complex that there are many, many layers, but it's also ambiguous because the ground keeps shifting. David, what else would you add to kind of a definition of ambiguous world as we dive in here?
Well, you know, as you were speaking, I thought that I had some really terrific conversations a week or so ago with a group of entrepreneurs, people who have been very entrepreneurial in their life, and their language around this ambiguity was about formlessness. You know, that one of the things that they're noticing in their world is that they can't necessarily look to form or look to product, that they're increasingly required to be process focused, which is an entirely different way of engaging. So, you know, that if they ever fall into the mode of product focus or single service focus, they actually fall off the map. They fall behind because things are moving that quickly. They're in that much flux. The technology is changing process and organizational structure faster than we can possibly keep up. And it's actually requiring us to develop this comfort with ambiguity, shifting conditions, focused on process, not form.
And, you know, as you're talking about that, one of the things that you and I were talking about in the last few days here was that what that's asking us for is the ability to swim around in the ambiguity as opposed to needing to be in form, as you're talking about, from the entrepreneurs, or we have this sort of human desire to want to be able to define things clearly, to know exactly where we are, to know what's going on. You know, it takes me kind of to the Heisenberg uncertainty principle from quantum physics, which says that you cannot know or you cannot measure both velocity and location at the same time. And boy, that really speaks to where we are in this ambiguous world, that we can measure how fast we're moving in one sense, but if we're doing that, we can't tell you where we are because we're constantly moving. Or if we can measure a location, if we can say this is exactly where we are, then nothing's moving at that point. And so we're invited into this world where actually things are constantly shifting and moving, and we have to be able to swim in the not knowing. There's something here that it feels like what we need to be exploring is how do we live and become comfortable as leaders, as coaches, as people wanting to make a difference in the world with swimming in the not knowing, and letting it show us what the essence of that energy is, the essence of that wave. If we're, you know, we're talking about in quantum physics terms again, it's being willing to not collapse into the particle so quickly, but to swim around in that wave and see what is the essence of that wave.
Yeah, and you know what I appreciate about what you're saying, in a world of education, in the world of learning and education, not knowing is the place of learning. And for our purposes, as you were talking, I thought, you know, really discovery, a process of discovery is a process of allowing yourself to move into a not knowing place and see what's there, as opposed to a predetermined, I think the world that's falling away from us now is a world of goal setting, the idea that you know where you're going, that you can sort of put your pin in the map and go to that place, which is really no longer possible. And
well,
that's the tension.
Go ahead.
I think that's the tension of the, at least a lot of the organizations that I'm associated with or working with, is they're feeling this tension between kind of an old world orientation to the idea that they can locate themselves and then go to that location as a goal, and the reality of the pace and the technology and the speed at which things are happening, and it's forcing, in some ways, a reorientation into much more of a engagement or relationship focus, which is what I think this ambiguity or leadership in an ambiguous world is really requiring of us.
Well, you talk about goals, and you know, I'm finding that with a lot of clients that I'm working with, and when I'm speaking to groups over the last couple of months, we're really having to make a very clear distinction between goals and vision. And because we've kind of lost that, we've turned what we have in the past maybe talked about as vision, we've turned that into goal. And they're really two very different things. And to recognize that a goal is very horizontal, it's very result-oriented, and standing alone, it often doesn't mean very much. But when it's connected to vision, which is very vertical in its orientation, it's very much comes out of an essence. It's really when we're talking about, you know, you and I the last few days, David, have been talking about this whole new paradigm of visioning, actually. That it's not about the narrative story of what it's all going to look like in the future, but rather what is that essence that's wanting to unfold? It's the essence that we're needing to get to. And as we get to that essence and let it start to show us a picture, then the goals start to make themselves clear. But goals, therefore, become something that we discover instead of something that we create. That's a total turnaround from where we have been and how we've been operating with visions and goals. And so, in fact, I wrote a blog post this week about here we are at the beginning of the year and everybody's asking, what are your goals? And what if that's the wrong question? What if we first need to be asking, what's your vision for 2013? Mm-hmm. And then out of that vision, getting in touch with the essence of that vision and the pictures that it starts to show you, then what does that tell you about goals. What goals does it give to you instead of you choosing them?
Right, and then thereby trying to squeeze yourself into a form that may or may not be appropriate.
Exactly. It takes us into that bigger question that we ask all the time of what wants to happen as opposed to what do I want. Well, the goals keep you very much in a here's what I want world. It keeps you very much into this is how I see it, this is how I think it can turn out, now let's go make this happen. If we come into the vision place and from that essence, we're working from the essence, then we're asking to be shown what it is that's wanting to unfold and then ask it, so what's my first step? That becomes our first goal then.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's I just had this, well, it's been a reoccurring conversation over the last couple of years, and this is a very concrete example, I think, of what we're talking about, or two concrete examples. I'm working with a man who recently told me that the App Store has changed the world. And I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, there are 500,000 apps, and I can pick and choose and put and pull and change and rearrange. And he said, my phone is this fluid place of information. It's never fixed. And so those words, fixed and fluid, I'm designing my life according to what my needs are today, not according to any sort of static idea. And the second expression of that was included in this conversation is this idea of website, blog sites, you know, where a website is a very static place. It's a landing place. And a blog site is a conversation place. It's dynamic. And this I'm hearing it over and over and over, how we need to move off a website mentality into a blog site mentality. And when I say, well, what does that mean? It's always to move off of something that's static, that is actually always outdated the minute it's finished, onto something that's very dynamic and conversational and two-way communication, so that we're never finished, we're never landing, we're never static, we're always fluid. So it's fixed and fluid. You know, this leadership as fluid as opposed to leadership as fixed.
That's
in
fluid.
Some very specific ways.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. That whole fluid piece, I mean, here we are with the ambiguous world again, and not something that we have a lot of experience with, nor do we have, as a mass consciousness, nor do we have education for. We have not been taught how to flow with. You know, we talk at Center for Transformational Presence about these two fundamental paradigms. Are you pushing against, or are you flowing with? Are you in an opposition paradigm or a co-creative paradigm? And so this ambiguous world, in a sense, you know, as you're talking, it's showing me how, like, evolution is forcing us on into this energy of flow with, because push against or working in an opposition paradigm simply will not work.
Right.
In where we are now, because as the vibrational frequency continues to increase and the intensity continues to increase, things will continue to get faster and faster and faster. Change will continue to happen at faster and faster rates. And so we can work with that, or we can fight against that. And if we fight against it, it's not going to work very well. It's years and years ago, you know, I wrote this piece about, and this was just a totally inspired thing, but about it becomes about planting your feet in the footholds of the wave, not planting your feet in the footholds of the ground underneath the wave. And so here it is with the, you know, the roller coaster, even, if you will. It's you're planting your feet in the car as you're riding, and rather than trying to stand still on the ground with something whipping around all the time. So how do we ride this wave? That becomes the question, David, of how do we function in this ambiguous world? How do we serve as leaders? How do we serve as coaches? What are we looking for? What are we inviting? What are the questions we're asking in order to help those that we serve be able to be effective in this new world?
It's a great question. And I, you know, just right before this call, so I I didn't have time to look up this book. A man was telling me about, he just picked up a book recently that kind of speaks to exactly this question. And it talks about Sherlock Holmes' mind versus Dr. Watson's mind. You know, a mind, which I loved. I thought, oh, that's fantastic. Because I think those are great metaphors for exactly what we're talking about. How do you, it's a natural orientation. So for instance, I believe that every child born on this planet is comfortable with ambiguity. Because they're walking into the world not knowing and engaging, touching, tipping over, checking out, looking what happens. They're not invested in an attachment to how things have to be. It's our natural state. So in a way, your question is, how do you get back to your natural state? And I think that the reason I thought this Sherlock Holmes line was that was kind of what this man was telling me about the book, that this observational mind, this engagement mind, to see what's there beyond what you think is there, versus the fixed mind of Dr. Watson, who needs an explanation for everything, you know, that kind of fixed mindset. And so the question is, to how do you return to what is your most natural state?
Well, I love how you're saying an observational mind, and I would add to that then an experiential mind of willing to, to being willing to not only just observe, but to actually experience, to feel the energy of what's there. And maybe we should just, you know, I had this idea that you and I talked about the other day about kind of an exercise here for us to play with. To see about how to do that. Maybe now's the time to just dive into that. What do you think?
Let's do it.
So if, for all of us, if you'll just bring to your awareness something in your life that's feeling very ambiguous, you know, it's a challenge, it's a decision you have to make, it's a circumstance or situation, maybe it's your work, maybe it's a relationship, maybe it's your family, who knows? And it can be absolutely anything, because you're not going to have to talk about this to anybody else. And then as that, we'll just call it the topic. As that topic comes into your awareness, imagine a swimming pool, a big swimming pool, and the pool itself, the water, that represents this ambiguous topic. And all around the pool, you can stand it on any spot around the pool that could represent different possibilities of things that could happen or ways that it could unfold or resolutions or solutions or whatever that might be. It's sort of the particles. When something collapses into form, all that stands at all those different points around the pool. But once you are in the pool, you're just floating in the topic itself. So let yourself jump in the pool. And let yourself just float in the topic without a need initially to have any particular knowledge or understanding about it. Simply let yourself experience, as well as observe, being or floating in the topic. And see, just notice, what does it feel like just to float in this? If the pool, if the water, if the topic had some things it wanted to show you, what'd they be? And as the pool shows you something or you feel something, just for a moment, climb up out of the pool and stand around the edge, standing in that feeling or in that experience or in that piece of information. Let it be a form for a moment. Notice, what is there here with this form? What is it I need to pay attention to? When it's this form, just for a moment, we're just discovering. Then you dive back in the pool. And you're floating in the topic, floating in the ambiguity. When you're floating in a pool, it's impossible to stay absolutely still. You're moving around. And the water around you is moving. Everything about whatever this topic or issue is constantly moving. But as you keep floating, then you experience something else, or you observe something else, or another thought comes into your awareness. So step out of the pool again to another spot. Stand in that thought, in that awareness, in that experience. What's the message for you? Dive back into the pool. And let yourself float. Pay attention to your level of comfort with just floating in the ambiguity, just floating in the topic or the issue without there being a resolution or an answer, or it's just all here and I'm letting it talk to me. Notice how that feels. What's your comfort level with it? And maybe the pool has an even deeper end than where you are right now, where you realize, oh, there's even deeper level of unsureness, of ambiguity. Swim over to there. Let yourself float around. In a place where the water is so deep that your feet can't touch the bottom. And what does the topic or the issue want to say to you from here? What do you observe? What do you experience? When you let yourself surrender to floating in the ambiguity. And if something else starts to become really clear, it wants to take a form, step up out of the pool, stand in a spot, wave collapses into particle, let that form come into being just for a moment, feel the energy of it. What is there for you to observe? What is there for you to explore and experience? Back in the pool, back in the wave. And so this process can continue on to realize that we are going to have to be willing to swim or to float or just to be in the ambiguous nature of things. And there's a lot for us to discover there. That can lead us to the next place. Let's open it up, David, a little bit and see what people want to share about their experience here. If you can, we don't need the story, but just what are you learning here about a process or about the ambiguity and letting it talk to you in a different way? If you'd like to speak, just press 1 on your phone and I'll give you the microphone. It would be great to hear from some of you. What happens for you in that exercise? So, Deb, you have the microphone.
Can you hear me, Alan?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Well, that worked really well with my grounded head, by the way. That was a good exercise.
Good.
I don't usually let my feet come off the ground as easily as that did. But I saw myself teaching this course that I wrote based on my coaching classes that I told you about. And then I saw myself more as a teacher coach. Then I saw myself, when I went back in the pool, as a support group leader on the topic of self-care. Seems to be something people could use. So it was nice to see a possibility for the future. But thank you.
Mm. Great. And Deb, just what did you learn about this as a process? What did this process allow for you?
The floating was really nice. And, you know, going from the idea or particle to stepping out of the pool, I felt very safe doing that. Looking at the form, even though it's not a form yet, pretending it was a form. It was a good process for me to go back and forth, and it guided me. Like I say, I'm usually got 2 feet on the ground, so this was really good.
Great. Thank you very much. There are several hands up, so let's go first next to Colleen. And Colleen, you have the mic.
Thank you. And I wanted to say two quick things. One is that as I'm perhaps the second time going into the pool of ambiguity, I found myself wanting to stay there, and so my process was, as you have suggested, I did experience feeling a sense of safety, of invitation to expand, and wanting to be in that space longer than I might have imagined. So thank you for that, because it also brought up some great possibilities. The second point is, earlier today I came across a quote by Albert Einstein. It's very relevant. He said, "I have no special talents. I am passionately curious."
Great. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Sue. You have the mic.
It was funny because the first step, what came to me was this resistance, because it's kind of the same thing that Deb has in the way of self-care. And into this beautiful pool that's based in Punta Cana comes this huge block of wood that represents this resistance. And then it shrinks down to something that was in my hand, so when I climbed out, I'm able to take it with me. So that was very, I mean, at first I'm like, okay, this, I'm just in my own paradigm. And then the second step in was another, was something that was kind of surprising in a way, kind of this white light of energy, and really opening up possibility of what, like you said, what's the essence, what could be here. So first one didn't surprise me, but when it shrank down, that did. And then the second one really opened my eyes, like, there's a lot more around this that I need to look into.
Mm-hmm. So, Sue, what did it feel like to be willing to let things show themselves to you instead of you go find them or create them?
It's that challenge of wanting to know the answer or know how to find the answer versus being patient and letting it come to you. Very different, because even the first one I thought I kind of orchestrated. So the second one being a little bit more open, it's a marriage. I mean, there's something that's in me also, but there's something else I'm inviting. So that opportunity, that observational piece, that experiential, that's a difficult mindset. I think that would be very difficult for leaders also.
Thank you. Anybody else like to tell us what you're discovering here? Yeah, Susan, you have the microphone.
When I first jumped in the pool, it was amazing how crystal clear things became. And then the next jump in is to see what would present itself next was surprising. However, when I got to the deep end, I couldn't float.
And instead, what happened?
sunk.
But you couldn't. You sunk. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Now, you see, I work in health care, and that's been ambiguous for a while.
There's several people on this call who are working in healthcare, so that's,
So it made me wonder if once I got to the deeper portions of that, the initial problem was not relevant.
Mm. Mm. And if that was not relevant, then what?
It would mean that I needed to jump into a different pool of ambiguity, a different view of the problem.
I'm just curious, might it be a bigger pool?
That is it, yes.
Mm, thank you, thank you. Connie, you have the mic.
Thank you. I also am in the healthcare field, and boy, did you hit the nail on the head, Susan. I'm in the mental health field with managed care, and so I saw sharks all around the pool and lots of disapproval and judgment. But I noticed when I got back in and went into the deep end that there is a lot of freedom and a lot of opportunity for creativity, innovation. I mean, it was liberating. And thrilled to have that information given to me because that's what I used to know in this field. So it's like I've created my own shark field, shark pool, and I can redesign it.
I love this whole thing of that when you got into the deep end, it got more creative. And, you know, it just strikes me. I don't know what your particular stuff is that's going on there, but what strikes me is that there's something that once your feet can't touch the ground, then you know, once the feet can't touch the bottom of the pool, then it demands that you have to let the water support you. You have to let
right.
the ambiguity carry you.
Right.
So, wow, David, what are you hearing from all this?
Well, you know what
Thank
I'm really loving is that the opportunity. And I think this is what this is why leading, like we're talking about leadership in an ambiguous world, that the opportunity in the ambiguity is freedom and creativity and new points of view. And it made me think of, in the United States, there's a man who has been a leader of teachers for years and years and years named Parker Palmer, and he has two models. They're graphic, and one is an expert focus, which is there is no ambiguity, and the other is subject-centered, which is, you know, a circle surrounded by many, many, many circles, many, many, many points of view, and none of those points of view are right or wrong. They're just engagement. And what I'm hearing is what he writes so beautifully about, is that to step into the subject, to step into this pool of ambiguity and not have to attach to any one location or orient yourself according to any one idea, but to really give yourself many, 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 many points of view, you have the opportunity for a kind of freedom and creativity and open-heartedness and open-mindedness that's now a requirement of the world that we're living in. The tension is that we're trying to squeeze our world of ambiguity into an industrial age known, you know, this goal-setting old paradigm that just isn't, it's not our world anymore.
You know, when you just said an industrial world, that strikes me that the industrial world was also a mechanistic world.
Yep.
Where you push lever A, it pushes lever B, makes C happen, and then D is the result. And that is the paradigm from which we operated for such a long time, very mechanistic, that things are predictable. You do this, you get this, and this. And now that world no longer exists. And we're in this digital world, we're in this intuitive world, because we're really, that's the next age, it seems to me, as we come out of the technological age into the intuitive age, that we're in this place where I'm going to push A and discover what lever B is after I pushed lever A. I don't know what is going to happen yet. I press lever A, I get a sense, maybe it's going to be this or maybe this, or maybe, oh, that's what it is. Okay, now I can move on to step two. And as I step into that spot of step two, something begins to appear on the horizon and I realize, oh, and then there's the next place we're going. It's this willingness to be in a place of discovery, this willingness to let the vision lead you instead of a plan lead you. You know, I stood in front of an audience not too long ago and said, this whole thing of long-term planning, it's dead, it's done, it's finished. Because when we're doing long-term planning, that's again saying, here are the next 10 steps, 1 through 10, and it's taking us a year down the road or 10 years down the road, whatever that is. Everything is going to be different by then. The circumstances, the conditions, everything about it is all different by the time we get there. And so this plan that you've made is not necessarily going to be relevant. If, on the other hand, we look out there to the future and we ask to be shown that vision and we get really clearly in touch with the essence of that vision, and then we listen and feel into that essence and let it guide us and show us, it will start pulling us towards it. And it will not necessarily show us all the steps along the way, because that's all going to evolve too. It's such a dynamic and free-flowing process of moving towards that vision, because as things keep changing, everything is in flux. Everything keeps moving around. So we see one step, and we take that step. We step into that new space. And as we step into that new space, the next space begins to show up on the horizon. And then we move towards that. It's an entirely different way of approaching leadership going forward.
There are two terms, you know, that you just made me think of that are kind of new on my horizon, but I'm hearing them a lot now, bandied about in business. And the terms are causal and effectual. And causal is mechanistic. The predictable, the idea that cause and effect, you know, as Alan said, you pull lever A and that trips lever B and, you know, sprocket C to do, that in fact the people that are, 700,000 businesses are started every year, only 3% of them actually make it. And the distinction, this is the distinction that I'm hearing, that the ones that don't make it are causal. They come from a causal mind, the idea of cause and effect. The ones that make it, those 3%, are effectual, which means the people that start them know they have an impact on their world, and they're impacting by making choices, but they don't necessarily know where they're going. They're creating businesses as opposed to products. And the business...
They're creating... So what they're creating is service and relation... Or they're responding to relationship and creating service.
Exactly.
Which might happen to be a product, but the product is a result.
Right, and it's never fixed.
Being asked for.
It's never static. It's always growing, always changing, always moving. So you are in service to that. You are actually in service to the person that you serve. And you, as Alan so beautifully said, you might take that first step.